It's the show Agent Orange / Adolf Twitler would love to shut down.
So here's the story, folks. I am the least black person that you've ever seen in your entire life. In fact, we did very well relative to racist people.
It's the no bullshit zone.
It's called fake news.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show.
I know who you are. Just wait.
On the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome. Or as we say in my native Hawaiine, aloha. Today we'll be actually talking about some big news stories from the 50th state and covering everything that has to do with the state of Donald Trump's mouth and how he screwed up the whole country through Twitter. Before we get to the depressing stuff, we should get to the happy stuff. Hi, my name's Shaggy Jenkins and I have survived another week to do a show. Also joining me from the city of Chicago, he is an educator both on and off the microphone. Please welcome Information Headquarters himself, Chris Bass.
You have overcome, for I am here. Shaggy, how you doing, man? How's everything going with you?
Good. Today, though, I'm going to tell you, I'm about to have that fist in the air moment for some issues happening here in the 50th state. Have you guys on the mainland heard anything about us?
Not until recently. Right.
Yeah, because most of the time, I'm not going to lie, when I do stories about Hawaii and I come on and I'm like, have you heard anything about Hawaii? Of course, somebody says, yeah, Jason Momoa. Okay. Jason Momoa, last week, this is no joke, Chris, Jason Momoa was body shamed online last week for having too much of a dad bod look. But you've seen that man. I want his dad bod.
I think a lot of dads want his bod.
Right.
You know, yeah, that dude is in the gym probably right now as we speak.
Mm-hmm. And then later he's in home with Lisa Bonet. So check yourself, players. But
you got to bow down. See, yeah. Something like that. You got the body and you got Lisa Bonet, bow down.
Exactly. But this is the thing. When we talk about Jason Momoa, there's actually a big story that's happening here in the 50th state that he's associated with. And it has to do with one of the most sacred places on what we call Big Island, what the rest of the world calls Hawaii. On Big Island, it's Mauna Kea. Have you heard of it?
Never heard of it until now.
Okay, let me give you a brief history, and I'll try to make this really brief. A long time ago, Hawaii was a nation. As a nation, it had certain territory. These territories were broken from the top of the mountains all the way down to the sea into different regions. If I'm pronouncing it correctly, it's called the Apuaa system. Now, with these ley lines of the Apuaa, each one of them has to crest at the top of a mountain. And of course, at the top of a mountain, because it is all the intersections of all of these different lands of people, they're considered very sacred and holy. And over the history of time, they have been used as everything from sacred worship sites, celestial navigation schools, which I thought was really cool. And then also as sacred land for burying their dead. Now, when it comes to Mauna Kea being one of the tallest volcanoes in Hawaii, actually one of the tallest ones in the world, it is one of the most sacred to the indigenous Hawaiian people, and as such, has always been, let's just say, never not contentiously dealt with in debate. The latest thing has to come with something called the TMT, not Teenage Mutant Turtles, the 30-meter telescope. A while back, the University of Hawaii authorized the building of this TMT on top of Mauna Kea. Fortunately, that construction would also go more into the ceded lands of the Hawaiian people and more into areas that they deem as sacred and holy to their culture. And they did this without permission. So the locals have been protesting. And this week, Chris, has been some of the biggest protests, with yesterday people being clipped from chains on the access road of Mauna Kea and taken to jail for trying to stop the construction equipment from rolling in. So with all of that said and done, I got to ask you, Chris, when it comes to situations like this, we have the United States saying eminent domain and we need this area for this science and enrichment of our people. And then the local indigenous population, which, by the way, was still a nation not too long ago, and even in present-day United Nations courts, is still being regarded as a nation in distress, not a state of the 50 United. So with all of that said and done, Chris, I got to ask you, who wins here, indigenous rights or eminent domain?
When you talk about putting people in chains and things of that nature, really nobody wins at this stage in the game. It could escalate into something more positive if both sides was really to sit down at the table and say, you know what, we have to go with this versus history of the island. And again, when both sides don't meet, you get chaos like this. And you have your right to protest. You have your right to be against it. But again, when it starts to escalate into that type of realm where people are being removed, that's the last thing you need. So I would suggest, hopefully, there'll be a meeting of the minds. There could be some sort of neutral territory.
You know, and this is the thing. I'm a huge fan of Doctor Who. And in the last male incarnation, I should say, of Peter Capaldi, there was this episode where he was trying to tell people the importance of conversation. Now, of course, he did it in a very dramatic Whovian way with boxes and wiping out populations and genocide and such. But he brought up something very, very important in this little diatribe of his. And it's something that I try to refer to during this time of protest. Now, keep in mind, when I say protest, I'm not just talking about guys picketing signs. We have tribal leaders, as you would call them in the mainland, as we would call them here, ali'i, and chiefs of the Hawaiian nation, coming forward and saying that their job with indigenous people over the next coming weeks until this issue is resolved is to take over harbors, airports, and all areas of American commerce, effectively shutting down the island until things change. And in that speech I'm talking about, Chris, I'm going to ask you this. Doctor Who says, everybody always avoids the obvious, the talk. And we always keep the talking until after everything gets violent, after people are taken all away in chains and shackled, after you see old people that were wheeled up to protest in wheelchairs being loaded in the back of paddy wagons.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it that in this country, when it comes to dispute like this, the government side never wants to talk to the side that they're wronging?
Well, I think part of it, well, first of all, thank you for the Doctor Who reference. You know, like you, I'm also a great one from Gallifrey, so thank you very much for that. When you look at the process of these two sides, I think when it comes to certain governments, I hate to say it, but I think they still have a bloodthirsty nature. They have to mask it, obviously, because we're not living in days of the caveman, but still, it's barbaric behavior to want to behave in this manner. You can find the best dressed people, you know, to the nines. They look very presentable in public. But who's to say what's going on in their mindsets when it comes down to not doing right by other people? The right thing to do, as we just talked about here on the program, is to have both sides to meet. But I think when it comes to government, there's sub level of understanding that nobody matters outside of the government. So you treat them as such. Because if we were to be cared about, as we should, but we're not, we will have better things going on in our countries, in our establishments, and again, going to the table to negotiate something positive. But for some reason, when it comes to people in power, in certain governments, they rather react negatively and not take care of the people involved.
You know, that's very important to mention, because if you're a person here going through the actual tumult of the Mauna Kea situation, you try to think, could somebody, like Bill Clinton used to say, feel my pain? And this week, we got a message from the president that if you're not white, you're not all right. And I kind of want to transition to that story by saying this is the funny thing. If somebody on my island of Maui were to look at somebody else and tell them, go back where you came from, that means person is typically a tourist, and in 3 days they will as such, board a plane and go back where they came from. But right. that saying, that very, very divisive saying, has a very different meaning for you on the mainland. And this week, the president came right out and told four minority women in the Democratic Party to, quote unquote, go back where they came from. Now, I want to be like, hey, you know, good on the mainland for discovering how they go home. But the president here is actually using some very backwards and racist whistleblowing or dog whistling. Am I correct?
Yes. No, you're more than correct. You talk about, once again, the quote unquote squad, as they've been called in the press, Democratic representatives, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Ayanna Pressley, Rashida Tlaib, and Ilhan Omar. So if they go back where they came from, you know, you have naturalized citizenship and people who were born here. And when you make that type of statement, which has always been in the rhetoric of racism, go back to Africa, go back to where you come from, things of that nature, it shows you right then and there that, again, it's not about trying to unite people. The president is not a uniter in chief. He is a racist in chief. Let's call for what it is. And you cannot spin this. We'll get into down the road about people working for him trying to spin this. You can't. It is what it is. If it's a duck, if it's quacking, if it's walking, if it's anything, it's a duck. Call for what it is. But then you have people within the party, like Republican Party, the GOP, who say, no, that's not how all of us think. But you being the president, you being in charge of so-called the free, you know, country in the world, behaving this way. What he's trying to do, is already doing, is giving okay signals to people who are already racist. Because what we're going to see coming forward, I hate to say this, is out and out racism in the streets. If more so than ever, because the head man in charge is saying it's okay.
Yeah, and that's just it. When he did that whole tweet this Monday, you would think that that was just the lighting of a fuse. Because if you've been watching social media all week, the country has been unraveling over these comments that he made. With the strong base supporters of Donald Trump saying, no, you don't understand. He's telling them to go back and fix their own homes before they, it's not racist. You know, there's excuse after excuse after excuse. And of course, me yes. being what I am and looking like what I am, I'm always like, cracker, please. But that's just me. But getting on into the other side of it, people see these comments and they're like, oh my God, here we are. Right back at the beginning of the civil rights movement in the United States, whereas somebody is told, A, you have a substandard place in society, and B, don't you dare step out of it. Now, there's the other side of these comments I want to bring up to you, because these are members of the House of Representatives. Trump basically told them to stay out of government business. Chris, does he know what the government is? Is that a good question to ask at this stage?
I would venture to say no, he doesn't. He doesn't have a clue. And he's beyond clueless. But he's also dangerous in his ignorance. You can't be the president, unfortunately he is, and saying these things and saying it's okay. So again, we go after these freshman congresswomen coming into play. And we had a conversation before about the new style of Democrats. These Democrats are really fighting back. They're using their words as power. They're empowering themselves and going after the president if they feel they've been hit, whether it's Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez going after Mitch McConnell or anybody else. You see this fight back. Now, me personally, I like that. I don't like anybody to just sit there and take it. Fight back. You believe in what you believe in? You attack back. And unfortunately, the president is not used to people saying anything back to him. Let's go back to when he was Trump before he became president. So you're a part of an organization, you're part of a business, quote unquote. You got all these yes people around him. Yes, Mr. Trump. Yes, Mr. Trump. No, Mr. Trump. Everybody's kissing, you know, his orange behind. Mm-hmm. And then he gets out of that, goes into the realm of running for the presidency. President-elect becomes president, and now it's about fact-checking. He can't take it because he's used to a certain universe of being held accountable from the standpoint of everything he says is yes. Not everything it says is fact-checking. He can't take it. And so, again, we're dealing with somebody who really is acting like more of a man-child than someone who should be comporting himself as the president of the United States. And it'll get us all in trouble.
You know, this is the thing that I got to ask you, though, because we all know how Trump functions. We saw it during the 2016 campaign. We saw it after his inaugural speech when he literally just came out of the gate swinging at all of his enemies at once. Time and time and time again, Trump is a guy that punches down. And he always likes a fight where he can seem like the aggressor, the all-powerful one, the one that's actually calling the shots and being the big man. Pew, pew, finger guns. But the thing is that with this latest little incident, I kind of want to ask an interesting question. Okay, Donald Trump doesn't function well when his polls are him and his actions alone. We all know that. Every time Trump doesn't have an enemy, his base kind of loses interest in him, which is helpful. But Trump loves a good fight. And I think, and I'm going to ask you if this is your theory as well, has Trump been beating and beating and beating different Democrats until he found a big enough punch to throw to get the enemy that he needs to fight for public, for his base going into the 2020 election?
No, absolutely. When you're creating a narrative, you need angels and demons, you know, white hats and black hats. You got to make the thing work. And so the old adage, you know, back in the day, with some old folks would say, if I took a brick and threw it in a farm full of pigs, one pig is going to get squealing. And so that's what he did. He threw the brick into the Democratic Party to see who would squeal. And he uses that, again, as an enemy, as a narrative, to say, I'm going to pick on that person or persons because that's what I do. I go after the other side of the aisle.
Yeah, and when we're talking about that whole back and forth, he has single-handedly done something I don't think any president has done in this amount of time. According to the latest polls, Donald Trump's base literally thinks the squad is the entirety of the Democratic Party. He has labeled them as the heads, as the leaders, and Nancy Pelosi is standing to the side going, hello, anybody? I'm still here. Yeah. Schumer and others are just in that same situation. Chris, what advantage for Trump is it if he has these young freshman representatives as, quote unquote, the face of the Democratic Party?
Well, what he's going after is freshman Democrats who he feels that won't be able to fight back. Like I said before about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez being the most vocal out of all, I think, out of the four. But you still have them fighting back in some way, shape, or form. And again, with the president, he's used to really going after everybody. But look at when it comes to females, for example. He cannot take an empowered woman. I think he has an issue with that. I think he's caveman. I think he's, you know, keep him barefoot and pregnant. I think he believes in that. So having said all that, when you talk about what he was saying before he ran for the presidency, it's going back to the 2016 debate he had with Hillary Clinton. She's a nasty woman. I mean, using words like nasty, I mean, that's street level.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and a person who's running for the presidency should not have used words like that, but unfortunately he has. But again, he's speaking to his base. The people, the foundation money, what he does, it's the same person he said, I go out in Times Square in New York and shoot somebody in the head, nobody will say anything. Those people who follow him religiously, those are the ones he's really speaking to.
You know, and the thing is that this is what gets me, and this is how you can tell that Trump's base is overwhelmingly Caucasian. Back in the 1980s, Miss Jackson said, call me that if you like it nasty. And we all took that as a very good thing. Yeah, Miss Jackson. But it seems that to Trump and conservatives, being called a nasty woman is kind of, just like it was in 80s pop music, it's kind of a way of saying, oh, you identify your power or empowerment through your ability to be clean and above board. Well, you're dirty. You're you're nasty, you're less than. And it seems like that's conservatives, how do I say this, MO, every single time a woman comes up, has a strong opinion, by God, it might be right, and the first thing they do is punch down. Chris, how is it that you can be a Donald Trump supporter and still have a vagina?
That's a very good question. If I had a vagina, I'd give you a better answer, but I don't. I think with certain women in this situation, talking about women who have voted for Trump and continue to support Trump, they don't see themselves, or they don't put themselves in the same category as, for example, grabbing by the pee. That's been now an infamous line that he talked about. And I think certain ladies were like, okay, he could grab them by the pee, but don't grab my pee. So they separate and say he's okay. Remember we heard before? It's just locker talk. It's just guy talk. And people like that, you really can't get through because they'll support him regardless because he's a man. I think certain women are subservient to men and don't matter what they say or do, as long as they nod their head and say yes.
Yeah, because see, there's the other thing about Trump this week too. You know that whole subservience thing that you just mentioned? It turns out that Trump is actually very, very, very upset at some people in the GOP for not coming out, and I'm not making this up, instantly jumping to his defense when he claimed on Tuesday, there's not a racist bone in my body. Chris, why would Trump be so upset that nobody's on that crazy train?
Well, and that's a good Ozzy Osbourne reference. Thank you for that. I think that, again, when you're dealing with a group of people, it doesn't matter. It just everything, no matter what you learn as far as common sense is common, everybody would have it, or doing right by people or individuals, it doesn't matter with this president. So, again, when you're on board with it, no matter what he says or does, you will go with it, you agree with it, you don't question it, and those people are along for the crazy ride. But the people who are saying, hey, wait a minute, that's not right. You don't speak for me. We're part of the same party. But see, the infighting, Shaggy, as you know, between the Trumpsters and the GOP has been going on since they merged. It's still infighting between the two within the Republican Party. It's going to be case in point what's happening now with the tweets and what the president said about, you know, go back to where he comes from and things like that. He doesn't speak for the whole party. So only if the party was to leave in droves or say, you know what, separate from what the rhetoric of the president is saying, but that would never happen because they're too much in power.
You know, the thing that got me about power this week is Nancy Pelosi wanted to use her power to pass a House resolution condemning those comments. And here's the funny thing, Chris. I thought, who cares? I'm being honest here. When it comes to condemning something that the president says, you cannot condemn him enough in every interview and things like that. And of course, a lot of Democrats and some Republicans are doing exactly that. So I thought, well, condemning the president, that's something that's already happening. Apparently, Nancy Pelosi thought this issue was so important that there needed to be a House resolution on condemning the president of the United States as a racist. Why do you think that is?
You had to set precedence and tone in the government. You had to get it documented. Because if we're trying to, quote unquote, impeach the president, let's get some documentation now and start the timeline for that. So I think that's Nancy Pelosi's goal, is to start here with this, you know, proclamation about what this president is doing, get it on file, get it inside the government, you know, files, and then take it from there.
You know, I think if she was wanting to go back to the beginning of this, it should start somewhere around 1944, but what do I know about time travel? I'm just a Whovian. The thing is, though, is that a lot of people this week wish that this time in America was indeed a time capsule, maybe a century ago, because of all the events that are happening. And this is the thing I want to bring up, because we got like a minute and a half here. Chris, everybody has been afraid to call Donald Trump a racist. They've been calling his tweets racially charged, which, okay, I'm a mechanic too, and I don't know how that would happen. They've went and they've done everything they can to carve a path around the word racism without actually saying it. Why is it that so many people, especially on his side of the aisle, are very reluctant to go, "You, sir, are a racist"?
Because they're afraid. They have no stones. They have no backbone. They're scared. They do not want to get the wrath of Trump in their way. So they rather bite their lip and be quiet and just go along with what Orange Master says and not question his authority.
You know, and this is just it. The more they don't question his authority, the more he's empowering others to act just as crappy.
Yes.
That's a safe way of saying it, isn't it?
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
But that's what's happening. And you know, when we get back from the break here in just a second, we got to talk about how Trump has actually been empowering people within his own cabinet to do and say some pretty awkward things this week. But in 15 seconds or less, I'm going to ask you, Chris, is Donald Trump's tweets, once and for all, racist?
Yes.
There you go. We'll be right back, everybody. It's the Shaggy Chicken Show.
Is the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network.
It's the Shaggy Jenkins Show on the Pacifica Radio Network. Welcome back to it. In case you missed any part of the first part of our show, our deepest condolences. You probably need to go back in time. Actually, no. Just go to our website, shaggyjenkins.com, where you can download the whole thing or look for us on services like iHeartRadio, and Spotify. Joining me from the city of Chicago and the best hot dogs money can buy, information headquarters himself, educator both on and off the mic, please welcome back Chris Bates.
Thank you, Shaggy. Always wonderful to be here. Man, we're going to get into the second part of the program, which starts off with not too many of people's favorite person to represent the president. They don't really care for her. I know you don't either.
Are you talking about that weird wooden statue of Melania Trump that went up in her village this week?
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah, because it would have a lot more common sense than the person you're actually talking about. Kellyanne Conway's correct. Back in the news.
That's wonderful.
Oh, God. Now, this is the thing. A lot of people are like, when you hear the name Kellyanne Conway, the natural reaction is to somewhat die a little on the inside. But the second thing is you usually just think of her husband and her going back and forth in the public eye, her being a strong supporter of Trump, her husband not so much on that bandwagon, as we say. But her latest little escapade has actually given her notoriety purely of her own accord. When she was confronted this week with questions about Donald Trump's "Go back where you came from" statement, which I cannot stress this enough, 1953 called, and they want their white dog whistling language back. But Kellyanne Conway actually went and asked the reporter something that I never, ever, ever, ever heard a public official utter, not on record or off record. And I've drank with politicians before. I've heard plenty. I've never heard somebody do what Kellyanne Conway did. Chris, would you care to enlighten folks as to her latest batch of genius?
Yeah. She called out and asked a reporter what was their ethnicity. And they had an exchange back and forth about that. The reporter pretty much saying, look, it had nothing to do with me, not the question at hand. The question I asked you was about the president's tweet about the whole thing he said about the Democratic congresswomen. And she tries to spin it by asking the question again and talk about herself being half Italian and half Irish, whatever. But again, I go back to my original point. You can't spin this. And it's insulting to question somebody's ethnicity and supporting. I know she's going to support the president, but you got nothing here. You got nothing at all. It is what it is. You're trying to find a way to justify it by questioning the reporter's ethnicity, trying to single the reporter out and attack the reporter. That's not right.
This is the thing that bothers me about this, though, because, you know, I always know that Kellyanne has creative defenses of the president. Let's not forget, she's the one that coined the phrase alternative facts. And that's something that's stuck with us ever since the day that she said it. But she is very good at taking whatever the president says or whatever his critics say and then rolling it around and being like, oh, you're just silly. You're just silly. But this is the thing. Her creativeness might have run out with this situation because I gotta ask, what was her follow through with that, Chris? Why do you think she was asking the ethnicity of the reporter? What could possibly come after that?
My take on the whole thing was the following. It goes back to what I said about creating a plausible diversion. And this is the first rule of magic. The first rule of magic says, in order for a trick to work, creating a plausible diversion. So the plausible diversion situation was to, again, take onus off the president and the tweets that he made and put it on the single reporter and then take it from there. That's what I got out of it. Because, again, in that moment in time, and let's just buy into the whole thing, you're looking at the fact that you go from this major story, what the president said was racist, what he said was wrong, out of pocket, the whole nine, and then going to try to channel it onto one person who was there just doing their job.
You know, this is the thing. What job was she doing? Because I know what you're saying. I know the whole situation that you're setting up, but I don't think she got the memo, Chris.
No.
I gotta throw this out there, though. We've talked about the president's tweets being dog whistling. When the president dog whistled, Kellyanne barked. Am I wrong?
She barks very loudly.
This time her bark had to do with a reporter's ethnicity. And I know, I'm a fan of pop culture. I am sorry that I thought when she said that, the next thing that was going to come out of her mouth was all under his eye and may the Lord open and everything else from The Handmaid's Tale.
Okay.
Because the whole, and I'm going to ask you if you felt the same thing, okay? Here's the thing. When the president came forward and said, oh, what I said wasn't racist, and she comes out and she asks a reporter, what's your ethnicity? How far away are we from Kellyanne's words actually being, show me your papers?
We're there now. You know, when you read through the code words or trying to, again, create a diversion, when you see incohesiveness between the president and when it comes to Kellyanne Conway, again, depending on your lens, you and I and others may know that the way we look at it is just a way to, again, to, like I said before about the president when it comes to Kellyanne Conway, that's okay. He's being himself. There's no big deal. Nothing to see here. But this is equivalent to an 18-car pileup on the expressway. It's serious. People can be hurt. People can be stuck in traffic for eons. And if you rubberneck, you're watching because you're sitting back and saying that, oh, man, look at that train wreck. The presidency of Donald Trump is that train wreck.
Yeah, I'm afraid you're correct on that because when we talk about train wrecks, Kellyanne has never been known not to be Amtrak. I mean, she derails more than they do, and they have an impressive record. But
yes, they do.
Derailments seem to be her line of work. I don't want to say this too conspicuously, but Chris, do you ever think that Kellyanne sometimes listens to what the president says and goes, hold my beer?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so, because that's her job. It goes back to what I said earlier about being the keeper of the gate, so to speak. That's what Kellyanne Conway's job is. And she is there to fend off people who are going to ask questions, this situation about the racist tweets. And her job is to give them the Heisman Trophy stiff arm to say, no, 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 you shouldn't ask that question. It's okay for him to have said what he said. It's okay when it's not okay. And then you sit there and, you know, you smile in front of the cameras and you make it kind of nicey nice. There's nothing nicey nice about racism. Nothing nice nice about it. But had she talks about it, hey, it's okay. The president's being himself. Everything's all right. Nothing to see here. Go back to the whole accident analogy I was talking about. Just go about your business. When the president speaks, it is our business.
But she doesn't want it to be. And here's the thing. When it comes to people kind of rebutting some of the president's more outlandish stuff, she seems more apt to double down than anyone else. So at the end of the day, is Kellyanne a better Trump than Trump himself?
You kind of like get Trump and then Trump 1A, the way I look at it. You know, she's right there kind of close, but you can't out-Trump Trump. He is what he is. But she comes a very close 1A.
Gosh, I'm afraid you're right. And now, this is the thing about her, because I am almost wanting to say that this situation actually thrills her, because for the longest time, Chris, Kellyanne hasn't been that useful if there's no fight around. And as such, I want to ask you kind of a question, because for the longest time, the Congress has been trying to get her to sit down for a subpoena for the multiple violations of the Hatch Act, which is kind of what she does every single appearance that she makes. And they've had no help in this matter by the president himself, who is supposed to be the ultimate one in control of whether or not she can violate certain things. Is there a bad precedent, though, for a president that allows someone like her time and time and time again to double down on what many people in the political world see as kind of an egregious mistake on his part?
It's a bad precedent. What you're setting is not only a bad example, but say, for example, a president to follow behind him and say, look, at this amendment. Now, if he was able to pull this off with the Hatch Act and everything else asked by a representative like Kelly Conway for him or her, then, hey, I could do it, too. It's already been bookmarked. It's already been done. So I could do it, too. That's going to be bad if that was to manifest down the road. It can. Because now once again, we have it on file that the president has done so. Once again, abusing the power of the presidency.
Well, when we talk about the power of the presidency, let's talk about the power of his words and how Kellyanne amplifies them. Because for the longest time, we have been talking about, yes, for a fact, please do not make any doubt about it. The president of the United States is a big fat racist. There, if we just accept that, everybody can at least have some sort of level playing field to come from. But because Donald Trump, time and time again, either dog whistles white nationalism, openly endorses white nationalism, or just plain comes out and acts like a grand dragon himself, Chris, he has been inspiring some weird changes in our culture. Now, this week, two things happened that I thought were just a little strange. One, Chris Kobach, you know him, right? He basically went on to Cuomo's show on CNN and said, hey, you know what? Even if the president came out and said, yep, I'm a big old fat racist, I'd still support him because Trump is good. And then CNN took it one step further. How much do you know about the world's most punchable face, Richard Spencer?
Well, not so much. I mean, when I read the article and seen some of the footage, that's the first time I ever saw the guy, unfortunately.
Well, here's the thing. Richard Spencer was the guy that coined the term alt-right. He's also the guy that in 2016 was filmed in multiple instances doing Trump rallies while giving the Sieg Heil salute. Heil Trump. Heil America was actually one of the chants from one of those meetings. Now, this is a guy that has been widely discredited even within the right wing of movement. But this week, CNN thought they would bring him on to have a little chat about white nationalism. Can I ask, did CNN lose its damn mind?
Yes. There's always an old adage in the newsroom, if it bleeds, it leads. Meaning that if it's that strong of a story where it bleeds out and gets the most attention, then it becomes the top story of the time. So for that particular program, with the lead with Jake Tapper on CNN, they went with this guy as a guest, as you said, white supremacist, Richard Spencer, and everything you just talked about, the alt-right and everything else. We give him that platform. All it does really further his cause, further his rhetoric, further his message. So what you're trying to do, I understand to some degree, you want to talk to all sides. But be very careful of the sides you bring on. Something like that, you need, and I'm not taking anything away from Jake Tapper being the host and moderator, but you need a strong personality, a strong moderator to go up against someone like that, because it's going to get hairy. You're going to start saying things that are going to offend people, obviously. But was CNN trying to get the shock value to their viewership? That I have no idea. But because it's so competitive in cable news, surprisingly, it just wouldn't surprise me.
You know, and this is the part that I want to bring up, because I've always thought that when you have a show, when you have a platform, you have, and I'm going to say this, because media doesn't listen to this enough, if you're a broadcaster, you have a responsibility to be a good one. That's it. And a lot of times, taking that simple oath of, I have to be a good broadcaster, well, that leads you to avoid certain things. One of those things that we always try to avoid in the please be a good broadcaster part is the don't give empowerment to people that are trying to disempower others. Now, that's something very basic across the board that I say 88 to 92% of the radio industry gets. Would you agree?
I agree.
And for the most part on television, it's all about ratings, so we don't care what they do. But here in radio, we have to keep it honest with our people. And when I talk about that honesty, there is a real honest depiction on CNN of the effect of the president's just relentless racism when even they go against the cardinal rule of never empower the bad people. Am I right or wrong on this?
You're absolutely correct, 100%.
Well, Chris, I got to ask you, how hungry for reality do we have to be in this country before the news media, guys like me and you, all kind of get on the same page and go, you know what, we have a responsibility and we shouldn't be doing this anymore? How long do you think that's going to take?
I think it's to the point to no return as a whole in the media. I think we've gone away from the days of, say, Walter Cronkite on CBS, fast forwarding to someone like Peter Jennings on ABC, you know, doing his reports. I think those days are gone. And then once again, no offense to the current people who are doing hopefully good news and honest news and right down the middle and be non-objective. But unfortunately, we've seen the interjection of commentary into our newscast. We've seen people take sides and pretty much divide when it comes to news situations. So is it news or is it commentary? Or have we seen a fusion of the two?
Yeah, because this week also, and I'm just going to throw this out there, Fox News decided to say, hey, when the president says something and you guys call it racist, Brian Kilmeade, who is supposedly an anchor on their morning program, said that this offends me? Once again, Chris, I don't want to say that the media has lost its mind, but we got white supremacists on CNN, and then we've got a guy that was not in the conversation. Please sit down, Becky. He wasn't in the conversation, but
right.
He got offended by what's going on. At what point do we call a spade, or in this case, a white nationalist, and avoid putting them on TV?
Well, you know, it goes back to the broadcasting company. You know, they knew exactly what they were getting into. They're not stupid people. I think they did a stupid thing, not stupid people behind the scenes there at CNN. I'm not familiar with the numbers, with the viewership, why they did it. Maybe they felt that, you know, it was just them being seen in it as usual. But I don't know. I think it was just, once again, strange for all that to unfold, especially for a station that network that's supposed to be not Donald Trumpish, if you get my drift, not like a Fox, having more fact-based information, kind of like a throwback to, dare I say, good old news reporting. But in this situation, I think it set them back. They may not see it as that, but I think they will eventually. And I think also, again, because we're living in a different era, a 24-hour news and social media, and people start to talk about this, you will have people responding in kind and not so kind. So I think that it's in pockets of information that we can rely on, whether it was your show, whether it was NPR, whether it was my show, whether it's other people who do other things outside of the norm, think out of the box. I think we'll see a surge of what we're doing because of the media being so saturated in what they already have.
Yeah, because this is the thing that I kind of want to bring up. See, you know I'm a big fan of media, right? And sometimes I like media that's a little weird. Well, back in the 80s, I'm not going to lie, I was a huge fan of Pee-wee's Playhouse. I did not idolize him. I just liked his goofy little show.
Yes.
One of the segments that he had on it was called Connect the Dots. You remember that? He would sing a crazy song and connect the dots, and then a picture you weren't expecting, poof, would pop up on the screen.
Right.
I'm going to play a little game of Connect the Dots with you, with Richard Spencer and all of this stuff that's happening right now. Okay? Here we go. All right. A while back, and this is very important because everybody in the United States has been trying to avoid calling Donald Trump a racist. Well, you can't avoid that. And the reason being is this. A long time ago, back in 2015, when we were a completely different country, a man came forward and basically said that the United States is too crazy and we need to break it all down into several ethno-nations. And the ethno-nations is the black people would have this area, the white people would take this area, and we would give the Asians this and the Indians that, and blah, 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 blah. The guy that came up with that idea of a white nation state is also the guy that coined the term alt-right. If you're thinking Richard Spencer, yep, ladies and gentlemen, that just it. He's also the one that brought back into the lexicon of whitewashing racism, of calling racist nationalists. You're not a racist, you're a national. And yeah, Donald Trump has followed that blueprint. As soon as the nationalist thing came out, he was at a rally in Michigan, and we all remember when this happened. He says, am I a nationalist? Yes, I am a nationalist. Nationalist came from the white proposed ethno-state that came from Richard Spencer, who is, by no stretch of the imagination, one of the worst racists to ever exist. So, Chris, how is it that somebody can still look at all of this connect the dots thing and not see the picture this week that's formed of the president is racist, and now he's empowering the rest of the country to be racist too?
Well, it's twofold. First of all, people have to read. They have to read, ask questions, and form an opinion for themselves, and not just believe everything they see and hear. I say on my show all the time, don't take my word for it, check it out for yourself, and then get back to me. So when I report stuff on my show, for example, I want to make sure that the listener, viewer is getting information not only from me, but on their own time. And I think doing research and finding out things is the best way to go. That's how you form opinions. That's why you talk to other people, like-minded or not so like-minded, and try to find some way from there. So having said that, also when you're Richard Spencer using things like peaceful ethnic cleansing, we all know that's BS. But look at the numbers. You're looking at the perspective of voters and research. Okay, let's go there. The people who are racist, the people who do not care for people of color, not care for a certain ethnic community or whatever, they don't have representation. They have nobody. Who they vote for when they go out to vote? If they vote at all, here comes Donald Trump. Here comes a guy who speaks for them. They feel empowered. They feel better about themselves, and they go vote. From numbers game, that makes a lot of sense. It's sick, but it makes sense.
Oh, gosh, you know, and that's where we're going to have to leave this story because we've got one more to cover. This week saw, at age 99, the passing of a former Supreme Court justice, John Paul Stephen. Now, he does have the name of a saint, and he was one of the guys that was kind of in the court very heavily. But Chris, after he left court, he wasn't too nice to the Supreme Court, was he?
No, not at all. I mean, he was in various articles condemning them for what they were moving, you know, in certain directions. And plus, recently before he died, he went after, courses, you know, about his anointment into the Supreme Court situation. And what I liked about him was he was able to say, you know what, I formerly, you know, was a judge, and I could see this coming up between how Trump's influence of that candidate was going to be a good one, not for the Supreme Court and then not for the nation in general. Here's a guy who really wanted to have a better nation, a better nation. And that should be said for all of us involved.
He wrote more dissenting opinions than any other justice in Supreme Court history. I'd say he was pretty important, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. And I mentioned the guy they were thinking about was Kavanaugh. Kavanaugh was the person that he was going after. So Kavanaugh, to him, was not the embodiment of what Supreme Court justice should be.
No, no, especially because Kavanaugh was the guy that defended Bush and the Bush v. Gore back in 2000. And, oh, there's this whole tricky history behind it. Chris, we're out of show. Where can people find you?
Please go to Facebook.com, type in Chris Bass. C-H-R-I-S, B as in broadcasting, A-S-E.
Yeah, and as for me, you can find me at the website ShaggyJenkins.com, online at Shaggy Live, or on Maui. Just trying to survive another day. We are Mauna Kea, and we are out.